The sun has left and forgotten me. It's dark, I cannot see.
Your stories don't define you, but how you tell them will. Hi, I'm Sarah Elkins, your host and chief storymaker at Elkins Consulting. Whether you're sharing personal stories or business stories, your stories matter. They affect how you see yourself through your internal messages, and even more importantly, they reflect on the people around you. How you share your story will change the way somebody perceives you. So, listeners, in case you didn't know this, there is a course out called Job Interview Storytelling, and it is a really good course, if I do say so myself. Visit elkinsconsult.com/courses to find out more and to sign up and take it, whether you're sharing stories through an interview for a job or an interview on a podcast. It will be a good resource for you, I promise. Today's guest is Ricky Birkenstock, and we met through one of our mutual friends, Mike Fritzius, who does the service called Podcastify Me. And if you are curious about what that looks like, I highly recommend you check out that site. The link will be in the show notes associated with this episode at elkinsconsulting.com. Ricky, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Sarah.
Well, it was an easy decision, especially after I looked up your LinkedIn profile and saw you hugging a tree. And our listeners absolutely know that that would resonate with me. I am not what you might describe as a touchy-feely person, but when it comes to trees and nature, you can believe I'm a touchy-feely person. So let's just dive right in. You know that I love to ask my guests to share something about themselves that most people don't know about them as we start off this episode. And the reason I ask that question is to give more context to our listeners so that they can see you beyond one particular part of who you are. I know that many of us get stuck, I call it being anchored in time, from one interaction online and people think they know you. So asking this question opens that up dramatically, almost like a canyon opens up beneath your feet and you get to see three dimensions, multi-dimensions of each human being. So what do you have to share?
Oh man, Sarah, I'd like to ask permission first. The thing that most people don't know about me is not exactly the happiest thing, but I think it does create a nice contrast.
Absolutely. It doesn't have to be happy.
It doesn't.
I'm a realist.
So when I was 18 years old, I passed on the scale of worst places that I thought I could be. I went beneath it. So the way I describe it is kind of death was a step up from where I was. And I found myself in that position, addicted to drugs, in jail. A whole pile of things I had to do to kind of get myself out of this. And I had two decisions. You know, I could either just give into the darkness or I could commit to myself and commit to creating the best life I could, because I did recognize I had created that condition. So if I could create the worst, then I felt like I kind of owed it to myself to at least see what I could create on the other side. And that brings us to where we are today, which is kind of a good sign to say, hey, we can do pretty well.
So, Ricky, I'm imagining this young man, a redheaded man, sitting in a jail. Can you describe what you saw, what you experienced as you started to recognize where you were? Because I know in the flurry of activity getting booked, you may not have taken full account.
That is a true point there, Sarah. And as we go back there together, I recognize I haven't put a whole lot of thought or memory into processing the experience, but it was a county jail, and we lived an hour east of Atlanta. So luckily, this wasn't one of our more inner city jails or a prison. It was a county jail. So it was pretty sizable. There were a lot of people in there. And when I was booked, it was kind of added to the shame of the whole experience. There were people I'd gone to school with there who were doing some of the booking, and it was like, oh,
They were
great.
working there.
Yeah, like how wonderful.
Awkward.
Yeah. So at my lowest point in life, I felt like there were more people there to kind of corroborate the story, so to speak, and get to witness it. So that was a part of it. And then I got the opportunity while waiting to be booked to sit in this big concrete room for a really long time. And it was, I don't know, I guess I'll consider it in retrospect a bit of a blessing. I was in there by myself, so I was just kind of collecting my thoughts and acknowledging the reality. And I do remember through the little slit, I noticed about two more people I knew. And I was just thinking, wow, here we are.
Wow. And what brought you in there? Why were you, I mean, from the police car into the jail, what was the situation?
Well, I was caught in possession of, ironically, marijuana, which is now, legal in
Is
Colorado.
ironic.
So, living in Colorado now, that just makes it more funny. But I was in possession of marijuana, and I had, paraphernalia in the car and things of that nature. So I was under the impression that they were actually going to let me off until they opened the glove box and found a stack of speeding tickets because I was doing a lot of street racing at the time as well. And it was a big mess. It was a big mess. And this was like, I have to just, because we're talking about creation and life here, I had gotten my first traffic ticket like a couple months before this. And so I often like to say that life gives us lots of signs when we're going down a wrong path. And I'm not kidding. I probably had 15 to 20 signs before this incident. So this was like the climax. The universe said, "Hey man, you've made your bed. Like it's time to go." So
Oh my gosh.
that was
Yeah.
kind of the preface, and then the conditions there.
Okay. Thank you for going into that detail because I think our listeners would be really curious. It's not like you had robbed a bank or anything like that.
Oh no.
You weren't in possession of a dangerous weapon necessarily, except
Just
for
weed.
yourself and your own emotional trauma that you're going through. So, the next question is, what was the first thing you did when you got out? Were you processed with bail and then you got out? What was the first thing you did?
I was so I was let out, and the first thing that happened was I was kind of grasping in the cell as I just laid there. Thinking about how I had created this and how I could create something better. And so I was already kind of emotionally processing these things. And the big piece was actually taking responsibility for my situation. And so instead of blaming anything, because that's easy to do, I just kind of finally said, all right, man, like this is me. This is my behavioral track record has led to a conclusion. And so let's find some new behaviors to create new realities. And I almost instantly, I'm going to say, relapsed emotionally as soon as my feet hit freedom. And I was just angry. I was really mad. And I had nothing good to say or think for a little while. It's probably a couple of hours. And then it all just kind of settled back down. I was like, okay, it's time to clean my life up. It's time to start taking affirmative action.
I love that you went back to that point because so many times when we're really in the darkness, and we're like praying to the universe or to God for whatever, whoever, whatever you believe in, saying, if I can just get through this, I will be so much better. And then you get through it and the relapse happens, right? And the fact that it only lasted a few hours for you is pretty impressive. Because I know I got caught. This is not nearly, I did not go to jail. I got caught talking behind the back of my boss who had been really cruel to me. But I remember I was standing in a grocery store and I live in a small town and I know better. And I'm going to should on myself here. I should have known better. And I was talking to a friend about how mean she was, because she was. I mean, I wasn't telling anything that wasn't true, but I walk around the corner and she's in line at the cashier, not 15 feet away from me. And I remember feeling really small and really out of alignment with how I want to experience myself. I remember being totally embarrassed. I also remember thinking, I'm never doing that again. I am never bad-mouthing another person like that again. It's just not going to happen. And it wasn't very long after that I caught myself doing it again. And I was telling myself, well, it's not like none of it was true. It's all true. So I was almost justifying it. Right. And then that reality came back to me, but it wasn't a few hours, like in your case. It was days, weeks of relearning that lesson as the words are just about to come out of my mouth. So, and I think most of us have that experience. So it was only a few hours for you. What was your next step? Who did you surround yourself with? Who were your resources?
So, if you don't mind, I'd actually like to circle back to your personal share, because you mentioned two incredible things. Number one is shooting on yourself, which is just the best thing, to notice the shoulds. And then the next piece is you're talking about the power of awareness. You know, the first time you did it, that was kind of the inception point, right? You felt the pain. And sadly, humans often have to go through really deep pain before we say, oh, I need to change this. And it becomes a motivator. But I have recently come to define awareness a bit differently, because I feel like a lot of people in our fields that work with people and help people achieve higher levels of existence, they just say, oh, well, awareness is important, or awareness is everything. And I'll exempt any of the profanity I've been using when I describe this.
You can use any profanity you want. This is not a kid's show.
Oh, great. Okay, perfect. So the first thing is fuck the shoulds.
Yes, agree.
The second thing is, I think it's just a whole bunch of bullshit when people say awareness is everything. We have to define it. And awareness is so important because it then gives us the ability to choose. Because before you're aware, you're just going on the unconscious programming. You're just going through the motions. You've got the software system in your head that says, hey, I do this thing. But now you're aware of it and you can catch yourself. Like in your example, you know, maybe you didn't stop the second time. Maybe you did, but you caught it to the point that you're able to describe it now. And that's super important.
Agreed. Self-awareness is something I'm finding to be kind of unusual to that extent, where people think they know how they're being perceived by others, but there's often a huge disconnect there. And that's where I start when I do my coaching. I start with the StrengthsFinder assessment so that I can have the language to use, that people sometimes they hesitate to just believe somebody. But if you have a tool behind it that has the Gallup name on it, sometimes there's a little less skepticism behind it. But I love that you just said that, because I always think of the Viktor Frankl quote about between stimulant and response, that's where our choice is. So my stimulant was that feeling bad about who I am, because I'm not that person. I want to support women especially, but I want to support people in general. And talking badly does not make me feel good about myself. So that's my stimulant. My response is, do I beat myself up or do I learn from it? And that space in the middle is where we get to choose that behavior. So I love that you just brought that forward. And listeners, that Viktor Frankl quote, look it up. Frankl, F-R-A-N-K-L, and Viktor with a K. Yes. All right. So did that answer your question? Did we loop back the way that you anticipated?
I think we just looped full circle. And
good.
I guess a more kind of positive personal share is, I'm a huge fan of anime. So I love anime. I find it so inspiring. And one of my favorite parts of it is almost every show, at least that I watch, which has just deep character development, they're really big on the idea that you can't do anything to change what you have done. All you can do is right now and what you do moving forward. And I just, I love that you share Viktor Frankl, and Man's Search for Meaning was such a powerful book. And I just read that book thinking, if he could do that in those conditions, like, who am I to say that I can't change my perspective or add more meaning to my life? So great plug.
I'm a big fan myself. Yeah, listeners, I highly recommend you look up Man's Search for Meaning, especially now, because people are struggling with finding purpose and relevance in their lives. I think that's a big part of the polarization that we're experiencing, is that people don't know why they matter. And so they're finding ways, sometimes sabotaging their own relationships by finding ways to matter and to be relevant that aren't necessarily good for them. So yeah, Man's Search for Meaning. So let's come back to this shift. And what I'm going to ask you to do, because clearly that experience at 18 years old and that shift is, it has influenced everything you do now and everything you did from that point forward. And just as an aside, another little neuroscience tidbit for our listeners, and you probably have heard this, our brains aren't actually fully developed until we're in our early 20s, from the time of probably 14, 15, you know, whatever, it shifts depending on our development. But our frontal cortex, the frontal lobe, actually disconnects and washes away certain pathways. And those are the pathways that help us to understand consequences. And this is why when I worked for my city here, our fire marshal said that the majority of arsons are by people between 16 or 15 and 20 or something like that years old.
Wow.
And it's accidental, and it's related to the frontal cortex not being in full comprehension. So it's not until, so we slough off these brain cells. We're being super efficient in that time in our lives. Our hormones are raging, and we slough off these brain cells that disconnect a bunch of neural pathways so that we can reconnect them as adults. And that doesn't actually happen until we're in our early 20s, like 23-ish. And for boys, it can actually be a little longer. So the fact that you were 18 and you suddenly had that experience that brought you to that point of, holy shit, this is going to be my future unless something changes today. That's kind of a big deal that you had that experience. And it makes me wonder if more people had an experience as traumatic as being thrown in jail, if that would more quickly put those neural pathways back. But anyway, I digress. So clearly that affected who you are and what you do now. So what I'd love to hear is an experience with a recent client. This is your way of telling us what you do without telling us what you do. An experience with a recent client where you really used that experience to inform your relationship with a client. Is that too muddy?
I'm not sure it's too muddy. I think I'll let my intuition take it.
Good. I like that. Okay.
So I think one of the cornerstones of that experience was the power of autonomy. And it's, I guess, just to define autonomy, it's our own, you know, driven ability to make choices on our own and decide our path forward. And so I can actually say this blanketly with all my clients. Very seldom do I ever say something to do. It all comes down to questions and pulling out what truly serves the person in front of me. So my clients have come to know me as more of a trusted advisor, someone in their back pocket, someone to help support them. And funny enough, it's really for all sorts of situations. And I have the blessing of being in this position with my clients where, you know, for instance, multiple clients have business deals come up and they want to discuss them, or they have an issue with a child or with their spouse or their partner, and we're there to talk about it. And they know that when they get in touch with me, it's not about, oh, hey, like Ricky's going to tell me what to do. Sweet. It's, hey, Ricky's going to reflect things back to me and make sure I'm making the decision that aligns with my highest self. And just by highest self, I mean, like you described, Sarah, that ideal of yourself that told you that you were off track, that said, this is incongruent with who I want to be. So it's that advisor to say, hey, we both know this is who you're striving to become. Let's make sure that these decisions line up with that. And I guess that kind of goes, I haven't thought about this, but that goes full circle to recognizing that it was my actions that put me in that situation at my lowest. And I recognize the beauty and the freedom that comes from making those decisions that do align with who we want to be, because that is within our control.
Right. So you kind of brought this around to a question I asked, but then we went off track, and I want to come back to it because you are that person, that support person that holds up the mirror, helps people see themselves and also how other people are perceiving them based on their behavior and their words, which I think is critical. I often say the stories you tell about yourself say a lot about who you are, but the stories you tell about other people say even more about who you are. So I'm coming back to this because I love the term personal board of directors. My friend Ann Wakeman, who used to run a huge nonprofit here in Helena, Montana, gave me that phrase, the personal board of directors. And I think about the people in my circle that help me grow, help me become who I am, constantly challenge me, and also cheerleaders for me. These are the people. I have somebody who is very high in the executing domain in Gallup StrengthsFinder, and so I don't have anything in that area. So she's the one that keeps me accountable. And then I have my sister who is great at reminding me of what my goals are. And so I have this circle. And when you think about who those people were for you, you mentioned this in your LinkedIn profile, that you have to be that's one of the most important aspects of change. You can't be 18 and say, I'm going to change and go right back to the same group of friends that you were in trouble with in the first place. That will never be successful. So who were your people when you decided that your decisions were the thing that brought you to where you are, and your decisions are the things that are going to bring you out of it? And then who are your people now? And how do you guide other people to find that community? It's a three-part question.
Yes. This is a great question. So, I'll start by asking, have you seen Frozen 2?
No, my
You haven't
kids are
seen Frozen 2?
grown.
Oh my goodness.
I barely even saw Frozen 1, so
Okay. Well, I often say that Frozen 1 was a wash. I'm not a fan, but Frozen 2, the lessons in that movie are absolutely incredible. It is one of the greatest personal development films ever created.
Okay.
And one of the core songs is basically, she says, "You are the one you've been waiting for all of your life." And like that always gives me chills because that was one of my biggest recognitions. And I am happy that this is a three-part question because this is a three-part evolution I'm going to share. My first step was isolation. And this was positive isolation. So there's a difference between isolating to keep people away from and
Right.
self-safety and I need my space and I have to figure things out for myself. So
Right.
there
Well,
was a,
taking that time for sure is critical to be alone without being lonely. But okay, continue, please.
yes, I agree. I agree with that. And, so I took a lone wolf approach, but I wasn't alone. So, I had my mom and she was there pretty much every step of the way. And, I always praise that woman, incredible woman. And she had my back every step of the way. And beyond that, I also had a couple of close friends. And I was working in Atlanta at the time. And so, with all those bills I had to pay, making 10 bucks an hour, paying $4.50 a gallon for gas, it was, I had to sleep on a lot of couches. And I often make the joke that I slept in front of a lot of ovens because I slept in a lot of kitchens for a while. And
Wow.
it was, oh my gosh. I mean, it was all worth it because I had freedom to get to. And that's the power of having a focus, but we won't get sidetracked. So I had these people, I had great friends. And a big piece of it for me in the beginning was isolating and realizing that I can fill my own base needs myself. And I don't have to go outside of myself to do those things. And that was one of the reasons I found myself in that situation in the first place. And so from that point, my next mentors, my personal board, I made the joke that they were all dead because it was authors. It was Maxwell Maltz and Psycho-Cybernetics. That was the first personal development book I ever read. And I was 21. I think I was 21. And I had never read a personal development book. And then someone came and I couldn't include this person in this list. They made fun of it. They were like, oh, you like personal development. And I
Like
was
it's
so, yeah.
negative in some way.
Yes. But
Right.
I mean, I was so excited because I realized that was a genre. I thought I had just like stumbled onto something cool. And it was like, for real? Like, this is a thing? And so I just fell in love with it and started reading and changing my life. And so a lot of my Napoleon Hill actually talks about this with his mastermind principle and his personal board is envisioning people that you respect. I think he talked about having, like Abraham Lincoln and Thomas Edison and people in his board, but it was all imaginary. So people that you hold yourself accountable to, even if it's just in your head, very powerful. And then today, I have I work with two therapists. I have a coach. I have men's communities that I work with. I have co-ed inclusive communities that I work with, and I am supported on all angles. I've got my wife, my wife's family. I still have my mom and my sister. Like it's, I am surrounded by support, and that's one of those key lessons where I thought the lone wolf thing was like my thing. And like all those memes you see, like that was me. It was like my wallpaper and everything. And now
Right.
like all of that is gone because it was one of those things that served me to a point, but not beyond that. I had to let that story go in order to get to the next level. And that's where I discovered the power of supportability. And that is a deep, deep lesson, or it
It
was for
absolutely is.
me.
And is that how you approach it with your clients?
Yes, and
Well, I'm going to go back a little bit. Clearly, I am loving the fact that you talked about your own counselors and coach, because I've talked to far too many coaches who don't have a coach. And as far as I'm concerned, that means you don't actually believe in it if you're not seeking out that guidance yourself, because none of us have arrived, right? We all continue to have things to learn. And the idea that the lone wolf part, I did that too. I hitchhiked through New Zealand by myself at 19 years old.
That's
And you
cool.
can't, thank you. You can't tell by looking at me on Zoom, but I'm only 5'2". And at the time, I weighed under 100 pounds.
Wow.
So the lone wolf thing, I had this whole by self attitude. Those were my first words, by self. So I get that. And the lone wolf, I think, has to happen at some point in your life so that you know that you can depend on yourself. And then we graduate into receiving and giving. I think that's the graduation point, is when we can receive and we can give. My friend Kevin Strauss describes that as emotional health. You have four different kinds of health. You have the physical, the spiritual, the emotional, and the mental. And emotional health is the capacity to love and be loved. So when you think about your clients and how you approach that, they're already on the right step because they're working with you. And that's what I tell all my clients. Oh my gosh, you are so far ahead of the game. Because you've actually invested in yourself and in this resource. Where do you go from there with your clients?
Well, there's two questions I like to always ask. Number one, does this serve you, or how does this serve you? And number two is, how would this look if it were easy? And usually when we're talking about how something would look if it were easy, it means we need more than ourselves. And so
yes,
it's strategically, you know, thinking, hey, like, who else do you need in your life? And how can we make that real? And we're branching out from there. And so that's kind of, I would just call that foundational.
I love that. Oh my gosh. I might have to borrow that, and I'll definitely give you credit. Because that's right. How can we make this easy? I'm reminded my father was all about knowing your resources. Mm. He taught the three of us very early, like from the time we were toddlers, how to do things ourselves, which didn't always mean by yourself.
Mm.
So looking up a word in a dictionary, right? Or he wouldn't let me take my car out until I could change a tire. He was not going to let me go out and not be able to change my own tire.
Yeah.
So I love that. What would this look like if it was easier? Not necessarily easy, but easier.
Sure.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you. So as you think about your own personal growth and the way you guide your clients, is there one particular client that you can remember maybe early on that was a big aha moment for you? Because I know as a coach, every client gives me something back for myself. It's why I love this work. And one of my very first clients, I realized that I had given him a task of creativity, and I had sent him as a gift a coloring book, an adult coloring book, and colored pencils. And I said, okay, twice this week, I want you to set your timer for 20 minutes and just color. And I remember he showed me one of his pictures. Mostly we did telephone conversations, but we had one Zoom, and he showed me one of the pictures he had colored. And I said, well, what are you going to do with it? He said, what do you mean? I said, are you going to tear it out, put it on your fridge? Are you going to frame it? And he laughed. He's like, no, I don't know. I hadn't thought about it. And I said, well, what are you going to do with it? Maybe your mom would like it. No, this is a 45-year-old man. And he said, my mom would love it. That's hilarious. I'm going to cut it out. I'm going to give it to her to put it on her refrigerator. And we both had a good laugh about it. But my aha moment in that was, why was I so insistent that he do something with it? And I realized it's because when I'm building something, I was doing a lot of ceramic work at the time, working on the wheel. And when I'd build something, I'd have somebody in mind for it as a gift, as functional use. But what it was external gratification. And having that conversation with my client, then walking away and puzzling over it was like, oh, okay. I was projecting my need for external gratification onto him. I can see you're nodding. You're like, your wheels are turning. So who is your client? Not obviously no names that helped you find something like that about yourself that then you were able to use and own for other clients into the future.
Well, I love that you asked this question. And I often say, like, my clients inspire me. Like, my clients are some of the best people in the world. And like, I'm always just floored. Like, after sessions, I'm just like, wow. Oh my gosh, that was incredible. Yeah.
She's so smart.
Yeah. Seriously.
Yeah. I do that too.
I wish I was that good. And I would say this person was one of my first clients. And when I first entered this different realm of guidance, so to speak, he pushed me to make him pay money. And I was like, dude, like, you're the first person I've worked with in this space. Like, I just want to, like, give this as an offer. And, you know, wisdom piece number one was, he was like, I'm going to benefit more if I pay you. And I pay you what you
want. Gotta have skin in the game.
Mm-hmm. Whoa. Okay. And so, so we did that, and he's still a client to this day. And, the biggest lesson I took away was, the less I say in this space, oftentimes the better off the client is. And the insight for me there was when my ego thinks that it has the perfect thing to say, I need to shut my mouth. And I need to ask more questions. I need to listen more. There's a great book called The Prosperous Coach.
And I have that one.
Yes. And the part on being a lamppost is my favorite piece of the whole book. Just, it's like, be a lamppost. Just listen. And it's just the most beautiful thing when you can create a space for people to feel safe enough to process the things that are really going on inside them, and then hear them and just be there with them as they self-diagnose and self-solve and do everything themselves. Cause that's my whole goal, is to help people see that, like, you got it. Like, it's in you. So we can work together, and that makes things easier. But also, like, you don't need me. And that's one of the things I like to tell everyone, in a, like, empowerment is what I want to see. And I think that was the biggest insight. It's like, the best way to empower people is not to speak to them. It's to listen to them.
I hear you. Did you notice I was really listening just now?
And I feel empowered.
I was being your lamppost. It's so fascinating to hear how coaches approach what they do. So I really appreciate that sharing, because it definitely gives an insight into how you build relationships with clients and what they get from you, which is that listening ear to, again, hold up the mirror. What do you want to see here? Is this behavior going to contribute to what you want to see in that mirror? I love that.
I often use an analogy of, like, if life is a bowling alley, like, I'm your gutter guards. Like, I just, you know, make sure. Yeah. Like, at the very least, we're going to hit a pin. Like, it would be irrational for us to believe that every strategic move we make is going to be a strike, but we're at least going to hit a pin. Like, we're going to make sure of that.
We're going to whittle it down.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That makes sense. I like that, especially because there used to be a bowling alley about 30 minutes south of us in Boulder, Montana, called Phil and Tim's. And they had this great breakfast restaurant. And we used to take our boys there. And it was so old school that we were still manually scoring with those overheads. I mean, this was only, let's see, if Jacob's 25 now, which about 15 years ago, maybe, and more. And all the other bowling alleys were definitely electronic, but this one was still the manual. So that is not part of the story. I remember we had these toddlers that we were bowling with, and very young kids, and they put the rolls from carpet in the bumpers in those alleys, because because they didn't have electric bumper guards, right? Bumper guard. So they do that center roll. It's like a toilet paper roll, but humongous for carpet. And that's what they put in there for the younger kids.
Wow.
Yeah, we still got some gutter balls because they didn't go all the way to the end. but that's what I was imagining. Well, let's come around full circle again. And when you think about the clients that you've experienced the most growth with, for them, tell me about one of those clients, and then what you think made them so successful when it came to that growth in their work with you.
I work with, I attract a lot of men clients. So I work with a lot of men. And this story is actually about one of my female clients. She recently had left her job. And she really wanted to start her new business. And she had absolutely everything she needed to do this. There was just really, the best way I can explain it is, there was just a gap for support. Just needed some support. And she has closed. I can't disclose the amount of money she's made in the last 2 months, because it's ridiculous. And it's just a little nudge here and there, and just being there and saying, like, to continue with our bowling analogy, it's like, You don't even have to, like, there's a psychological benefit to knowing there's someone in your corner. There's someone who's always got your back. And I only accept a few clients because I make sure I'm available for them. And like, if I need to jump on the phone or if we need to talk about something, you need support, I'm here. I'm here all the time. I have time boundaries. Boundaries are important. But
Yes.
with her, it was just a matter of saying, hey, like, basically, you got this and you're doing all the things. That was the big point here is like, it was nothing magical. Like, she was doing all the things.
Right.
And we can all get into this shoulding fest with ourselves and expect the gratification of the money coming in. But for a lot of entrepreneurs, myself included, there's a big shift when we realize that money is a lag indicator. Like, it comes later. The lead indicators is your behavior. You know, money is always an effect. Money is not a cause. So with her, it was monetary, but also like, she proved to herself she could do this. Like, she's free. She is free. And it's just so exciting. So I don't know if that answered your question, but
Sure. I mean, what you're saying is that part of the reason she got to where she is because she had the capacity. She had the intelligence, she had the tools that she needed.
100%.
She just needed that resource. She needed the bumper guards for the confidence more than anything else. She was going to hit a strike, but she just needed to know that she had some guardrails.
Absolutely. It's a, and just to touch on it in a little bit more depth, we all have traumas and patterns that hold us back. And they can come up at very unique times. And oftentimes it's when we go to that next level of life, so to speak, like we're trying to step things up. It's like, oh, there's those patterns again. And so when you know you've got someone who can hold you accountable, keep that mirror up, and also be able to look at the horizon with you and
For
say,
sure.
we're in this together. You don't have to do this alone. That's often enough. I mean, there's nothing special. There's nothing magical that I ever do. So that's yeah.
Ah, I like that. And that's a perfect way to wrap up. It's not magical. It's really about knowing yourself and knowing who is in your corner more than anything else. And it comes right back to your community. How are you building your community? Because if you're going back to the same people over and over again for guidance, and these aren't people who have ever done what you want to do, and these are people who n maybe with all the love for you are the ones that are contributing to your shoulds instead of the do and stop worrying and just go. I think I've said this so many times in my over 300 episodes, your community will make or break your success. Whatever that success is defined in terms of impact or income or satisfaction, however you define success, your community, the people that are surrounding you, the people that are supporting you, the people that are challenging you. And I love that you said the guy that said, oh, you're a personal development guy, that spite sometimes is one of the best motivators. So even somebody within your circle that you're doing this to spite or in spite of, that's still part of your community that is driving you. So I like that. Ricky, thank you so much for joining me today. If people want to get in touch with you, how do they do that? Who are you looking to reach out to? Or would you like to reach out to you? And listeners, just so you know, this will all be in the show notes associated with the podcast at elkinsconsulting.com.
So, another slight tangent to support what you just said, Sarah. It is so important who you surround yourself with and who you call for counsel. And just a really quick story. My wife called me the other day, and we're great support partners in life. And she calls me, and she has something going on with her eye, and you know, she wants support in that. And I'm gonna say I'm the quickest person to refer out. Because if I'm not the right person, I'm going to get you in touch with the right person, basically. So,
Yes.
she called in. Her father is he's an emergency room doctor.
And she called you.
And I said, "Babe, call your dad." It was his birthday, and she's like, "I don't want to bother him." I was like, "Oh my gosh, this is not my wheelhouse. My zone of genius is small." Okay, outside of that,
It's not medical.
yeah, no. So, I just wanted to touch on that because that's beautiful. And if so, I basically exist on LinkedIn right now. So if you're on LinkedIn and you want to connect, you can find me at Ricky Birkenstock. And there's something in there about life quality engineer, because that's what I say that I do. I help people engineer a higher quality of life. And that's essentially the best place to find me. And I'll have updates for different marketing materials in the future, but I like to keep things personal. So
And simple.
yes, simple and personal.
One-stop shopping.
Yes.
Excellent. I love that. Thank you so much. I so appreciate your time.
Thank you, Sarah.
Listeners, now it's your turn. Who do you have in your circle? You've been asked this many times on this podcast. I want to know who you're going to shed out of your circle. Who are the people that are holding you back? And that doesn't necessarily mean completely cutting them out of your life, but it does mean making sure they aren't influencing you in a negative way. Who will you shed from your circle so that you have room for the right people? Thank you so much for listening to Your Stories Don't Define You, How You Tell Them Will.
Smile, what's the use of crying? You'll find that life is still worthwhile. If you just smile.